What's up? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, your morning starting pitcher podcast brought to you by PitcherList.com. My name is Jake Crumpler, and today is August 29th. Let's break down every single start from August 28th. We'll start it off with Jackson Kent, and we've got another guy to add to our list of pitchers who qualify as a swatch, a southpaw with a tight changeup. Jackson Kent handled the Marlins in DC with ease, tossing seven innings, allowing one run with three hits, four walks, and three strikeouts, inducing eight whiffs with 25% CSW in the first outing that truly displayed his potential. From the moment that he debuted, Kent checked the boxes to be labeled a swatch. He showed off a 93-mile-per-hour four-seamer with 7 feet of extension and a decently flat approach angle with 1.0 HAVA. He also had a slider to handle same-side batters and a curveball with which to steal strikes. He also had the ability to separate his pitches, showing impeccable command. Oh, and most importantly, he's left-handed and he has a dope changeup. Poor control in his debut. Despite great pitch separation, he had a low zone rate, unfortunate batted ball luck in his second start, and inherited runners scoring against a terrible bullpen in his third start hid the fact that Kent's destined to become somebody that we trust as a streamer down the stretch with even greater capacity for contributions in 2027. On Friday, Kent not only got a much-deserved wink from Koufax with 17 outs on 20 balls in play, but he also showcased the depth of his arsenal, incorporating a sinker that gives him even more looks with which to fool batters and set up his changeup. Kent did an excellent job of keeping the sinker low in the zone to produce ground balls and allow it to tunnel with his slow ball. It's a great addition that will not only assist in reducing loud contact and raising his strike rate, but it should also allow his four-seamer to perform much better upstairs as a put-away pitch. If you've got a soft spot for southpaws with tight changeups and are looking for a sneaky streamer next week, look no further than Kent hosting the Braves. The Braves have been a bottom six offense in August, and they've performed worse than league average against lefties throughout the season. Kent's got a stable floor with a long leash, above average command, and a deep arsenal that should set him up to take down most teams when he's executing his game plan correctly. Now let's see how every other starting pitcher did on Friday, starting with Michael Wacha in Cleveland. He tossed eight shutout innings, allowing just four hits, walking nobody while striking out 10. He induced 16 whiffs and 37% CSW to earn the golden goal, and Wacha saw the incoming Guardians and got hyped, knowing they would serve him a hefty order of left-handed batters, perfect for a changeup wielder like himself. With his best changeups and 1 to 2 extra ticks of velocity, which was likely a product of the hype with which he entered the start, Wacha obliterated his opposition with a flare of golden sparkles across eight scoreless frames featuring whiffs and CSW galore. Wacha earned the golden goal. Starts where you expect a pitcher to dominate, and they come through to do so much. Where they come through do so much to keep me sane. Thank you, Mr. Wacha, and I hope you finish the season as strong as you started. Next, we have Cam Schlittler versus the Red Sox. He tossed 5 2/3 scoreless innings, two hits, five walks, eight strikeouts, but he induced 16 whiffs to earn a co-share of the gallows pole. Ace is going to ace for Schlittler as he got a gallows pole despite walking five batters due to a few too many four-seamers, uncompetitively above the zone in three ball counts, as well as a sub 50% strike rate on cutters that sort of put him behind the eight ball. Often, it didn't prevent Schlittler from producing a scoreless Philly and a co-share of the gallows pole, and it doesn't affect his outlook for the final month of the season. Next, we have Drew Anderson versus the Dodgers. 4 2/3 scoreless innings, four hits, five walks, and five strikeouts. And this start was a list of pros and cons. The pros were that Anderson shut out the Dodgers. He had excellent pitch separation, and he had the longest leash of the season with 89 pitches. The cons were that he failed to qualify for a win, that he had diminished velocity, and that he had too many walks. I'm more inclined to find hope in the pros list and write off everything because of the concerns in the cons, rather than write off everything because of the concerns in the cons list. Anderson has arrived at Streamer University, and he is on the menu with the Twins times two across his next two starts. Next, we have Brandon Young in Sacre Verde. Seven innings, one earned, five hits, one walk, and four strikeouts. And nobody's banged the drum harder for Brandon Young than I have this year. But even I was barely brave enough to start him in Sacre Verde. I should have maintained my faith because he did exactly what he needed to to survive that pitcher graveyard. Right-handed batters were served perfectly executed sliders low and away, sinkers jamming them arm side, and four-seamers hunting whiffs upstairs. Left-handed batters got a bunch of four-seamers upstairs and glove side, while splitters, sliders, and curveballs fell below the zone to hunt for whiffs. I can't take credit for this one, but I'm only further enamored with Young, especially given his floor and upside for 2027. That being said, I can't endorse Young in the second half of the Green Mile when he heads to Colorado next. Next, we've got Logan Henderson versus the Rangers. 7 innings, 1 earned, 1 hit, no walks, and 7 strikeouts. Ace is going to ace for Logan Henderson. This is why he had his coronation day this week on the list, and he's done everything he needed to do to be considered an ace, and I'm so glad to see him support our decision to give him that crown. Next, we have Hunter Brown in Queens, 6 2/3 innings, 1 earned, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 10 strikeouts. And with Brown, we're looking for his fastballs to perform as they did in 2025 and for his curveball to be there to back them up like the best friend of the school bully, the kind of guy that goes, yeah, what he said. We saw fastballs with last year's shape and velocity, but curveballs weren't as dominant as you'd expect given the results. Sliders stepped up a little with an extra tick of velocity to sit 91 to 92 miles per hour, but his breakers weren't commanded well overall, combining for just 57% strikes. This was a product of an unsustainably high 67% put away rate, propelling Brown to a season high 10 strikeouts. That doesn't mean he isn't someone we should be trusting right now, but it does suggest that this start wasn't the one that returns him to ace dumb immediately. Next, we've got Tarek Skubal in Detroit against his former ball club. 6 innings, 1 earned, 4 hits, no walks, and 7 strikeouts. And Ace is going to ace against his former club. It was weird watching Skubal pitch against the Tigers in Comerica Park. The only thing weirder is Skubal in that AI graphic of the Dodgers rotation making its rounds on the internet since the club partnered with Kalshi. That is a weird one, and it makes me despise sports betting even more than I despise the Dodgers, which is saying a lot. Next, we've got Tanner Bibee versus the Royals. 6 innings, 1 earned, 7 hits, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts. And with a new lower arm angle, Bibee is getting a lot more drop on his pitches. He's surprisingly done so without sacrificing a ton of vert on his already mediocre four-seamer, which is it gives you a little bit of hope that he's still going to be able to figure things out. This wasn't the start, though, that I'd point to if I wanted someone to see a showcase of Bibee's new talents, as he commanded poorly and somehow stranded 9 base runners as he hit a batter in this one as well. But since lowering his arm angle on May 31st, Bibee's produced a 3.44 ERA, a 106 whip, and an 18% strikeout rate. Come get your Toby and start him against the paltry Blue Jays offense in Cleveland next. Next, we've got Dylan Cease versus the Mariners. 6 innings, 1 earned, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 8 strikeouts. Ace is going to ace. I guess the reduced velocity isn't anything to be concerned about with Cease, since he has seen his velocity drop below 96 miles per hour. He's produced a 1.57 ERA, a 0.85 whip, and a 36% strikeout rate. However, at 95.2 miles per hour on Friday, he averaged his slowest fastball of the year, and it produced his first start with single-digit whiffs, just 8 whiffs on Friday from Dylan Cease. Just something to chew on, and no, you don't have to spit out your gum, just something for your mind to chew on, not for your mouth. Next, we've got Reed Detmers versus the Phillies. 6 innings, 1 earned, 8 hits, no walks, and 2 strikeouts. And there's nothing he can do to scare me anymore. I've already come to terms with the fact that all the signs pointing to Detmers' demise are just warning signs for me to avoid him in 2027, not for the final month of 2026. It's like walking through the toxic place in a movie where all the signs are screaming things like danger, no trespassing, or biohazard. But we're not going to heed those warnings. They're for the next guy to worry about. Next, we've got Quinn Matthews versus the Pirates. 5 2/3 innings, 1 earned, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 7 strikeouts. And Matthews is going to be the downfall of my 2027 drafts. He's one of those guys who has so much upside, but will be difficult to make a decision on early in the season, which means he's going to be somebody that I hold on to for too long. And if he ultimately doesn't break out, then it'll really hurt my fantasy teams. Regardless, Matthews is doing everything he can to get me pumped for a full season. He's a swatch with better stuff than you usually see from that skill set. And it's all about whether or not he's battling himself in a start. He was in full control on his way to a Philly in his home debut as he made his best attempt at pulling off the Blake Snell blueprint. It wasn't perfect, but he's doing exactly what you want to see with his arsenal. Matthews is going to be a bit of a hipster down the stretch as he looks to nail down his command. And we can't yet trust him when he heads to Hollywood next, but I'm excited to see him display his potential with the Giants times two afterwards. Next, we have Patrick Sandoval in the Bronx. He tossed 5 1/3 innings, allowing 1 earned, 3 hits, 4 walks, and 7 strikeouts. Is it the nickname or the stuff that has me weirdly intrigued by the Irish Panda this year? It's probably a little bit of both, but I don't think he's worth our attention in September unless you're desperate in a deep league. There's certainly strikeout upside here, but his failure to keep changeups low or really command anything other than sinkers is like the aposematic coloration of a poisonous frog. It's like the bright colors on the frog that say, avoid me. That's Sandoval's inability to command his signature pitch is just like that. Next, we have Jacob Lopez versus the Orioles. 5 innings, 1 earned, 3 hits, 3 walks, and 6 strikeouts. The hot streak lives on. That's a 2.06 ERA, a 1.07 whip, and a 29% strikeout rate across his last 7 starts. He's proven that Sacre Verde won't even stop him from excelling with the Cannonball McSanchez plus Blake Snell blueprint approach, which I feel like I've seen a lot more recently. We've seen a lot of four-seamers and cutters upstairs with sliders down low. It's working a lot for Jacob Lopez. It's working a lot for many guys around the league. I'm not really concerned about Lopez's drop in velocity either. He already struggles to eclipse 90 miles per hour, so it was never like velocity was a big part of his game. A tick of velocity maybe allows him to get away with a few more mistakes, but he's not really making any mistakes right now. He also threw slower in his last start, and it didn't matter, so I don't think it's anything to worry about. I'd be blindly starting Jacob Lopez in Texas next. Next, we have Casey Mize in Tampa Bay. 5 innings, 2 earned, 6 hits, 1 walk, and 1 strikeout. Yikes. I don't know what's up with Casey Mize. I know he's dealing with a sprained ankle that limited him in his last start. That explains his limited pitch count here as he threw just 77 pitches, but that doesn't account for his reduced velocity across the board and his standalone whiff returning a standalone strikeout. Just one whiff from Casey Mize and 1 strikeout. How am I supposed to butter my bread with that? With a tough schedule ahead, hosting the Yankees and Nationals before heading to Coors, I'm leaning towards sending Mize to the wire instead of letting him ruin my fantasy playoffs. Next, we have David Peterson versus the Reds. 5 innings, 2 earned, 6 hits, 3 walks, and 6 strikeouts. The Cubs gave Peterson a better defense behind him, and he's rewarded them with improved command and more trust in his changeup. The command of fastballs has been so much better. He's keeping his secondaries down low. He's become more of a swatch with his reliance on that changeup. And since allowing 10 runs in his second start in different pinstripes for the Cubs, Peterson has produced a 2.35 ERA, a 1.26 whip, and a 21% strikeout rate. Nothing spectacular. It's not the best whip. It's not a lot of strikeouts, but Peterson's proven to be a Toby worth streaming with the Brewers times two across the next 2 weeks. It's a bit questionable, but in deep leagues, I wouldn't question it. Next, we'll talk about Andrew Painter, Shane McClanahan, Cody Bradford, and the rest of the guys who started on Friday. But first, we're going to take a quick break here on the Plus Pitch podcast. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here, breaking down every single start from Friday, August 28th, resuming with Andrew Painter in LA against the Angels. He tossed 6 innings, allowing 3 earned with 2 hits, 3 walks, and 6 strikeouts. He induced 16 whiffs to earn a co-share of the gallows pull. Painter was the biggest riser on this week's list, and for good reason. I'm sad to report, though, that he didn't look quite as impressive as he did in his last start, but it's still an improved version of himself. Four seamers fell from 97 plus with 18 inches of IVB to 96 plus with 17 inches of IVB, while his secondaries didn't have the same drop and he threw far fewer strikes. Thus, you have the impressiveness of the share of the gallows pole married with the underwhelming poor quality start. It's a little misleading. He was bamboozled in the first, and that accounted for all 3 runs and 2 of his 3 walks, after which he pitched 5 hitless innings, but without the same overwhelming stuff, we have to monitor our excitement. We have to limit it a little bit. I'm still holding Painter everywhere and starting him in Arizona next, but Painter still has some work to do to find some consistency in his stuff and command before we can really think of him as a potential ace moving forward. Next, we have Shane McClanahan versus the Padres. 5 2/3 innings, 3 earned, 3 hits, 2 walks, and 4 strikeouts. And so close to a great outing, but a 2-out walk and a 2-run homer knocked McShane out of the game and stuck him with a Philly. You can't even really blame him for the dinger because it was a well-located curveball below the zone that the red-hot Jackson Merrill was able to fish out of the dirt and lift into the lights of the trop. McShane's still working on expanding his pitch count and separating his pitches, but with 80 pitches under his belt after returning from the injured list, I think we're safe starting him hosting the Mets next. Next, we have Cody Bradford in Milwaukee. 5 2/3 innings, 3 earned, 9 hits, 2 walks, and no strikeouts. It's hard to survive with sub 90 mile per hour velocity when you don't eclipse 60% strikes with your heater. It gets even harder when you can't get your changeups low. Bradford was more hittable than ever, so much so that he failed to produce a single strikeout. How am I supposed to butter my bread with that? A Philly with 11 base runners and no punch outs is about as wonka as it gets. You get nothing. Don't count on this Toby production hosting the A's next week. Don't count out Toby production hosting the A's next week. Bradford isn't somebody with a high ceiling, but he could produce a win with the A's away from Sacre Verde. Next, we have Christian Scott versus the Astros. 5 1/3 innings, 3 earned, 1 hit, 5 walks, and 2 strikeouts. The sweeper-focused Scott was served the Astros lineup that pitchers like him typically devour, and he was making a mukbang of his opposition until he completely lost control in the sixth, walking the bases loaded before getting a hook and watching all three runners come around to score. That's a careful Icarus if I've ever seen one. I'd write this one off and still recognize Scott as a strikeout upside play moving forward. Next, we have Grant Holmes versus the Rockies. 5 innings, 3 earned, 8 hits, 1 walk, and 3 strikeouts. And if this isn't the epitome of the real estate broker, Holmes threw 6 shutout frames in 3 of his past 4 starts, luring in potential buyers for an ideal matchup against Rocky Road before he pulled the rug out from under trusting fantasy managers with an underperforming outing, to say the least, here on Friday. He breaks the Hawaskar rule, y'all. He's only got a slider, and he's got nothing else to support it. This isn't somebody you should be trusting. He hasn't struck out more than 6 batters, but once this year, and he's only struck out more than 5 batters twice this year. It was 6 Ks and 10 Ks. It's not a guy you want to be chasing. Next, we've got Rhett Lauder on the north side of Chicago. 5 innings, 3 earned, 6 hits, no walks, and 5 strikeouts. And I hope you got your Lauder streams in while you could. He secured us back-to-back wins. Now it's back to the wire with the Padres and Dodgers x2 on the upcoming schedule. I don't think we're going to get another chance to stream Lauder again this year, and I think it's time to say your goodbyes. So long, bro. Next, we've got Jared Jones in St. Louis. 4 2/3 innings, 3 earned, 7 hits, 1 walk, and 6 strikeouts. I so badly want Jones to be dope, but he's not pulling off the pristine Blake Snell blueprint that he needs to pull off his two-pitch approach. What about the curveball, you might say? It actually showed up in spades on Friday as he increased its usage to 20% and used it to induce a whopping 53% CSW and 76% strikes. And sliders were actually equally as dope with 45% CSW and 76% strikes as well. This was all due to poor fastball command, leaving sliders prone to damage in the heart of the zone and a short leash that prevented him from completing 5 frames. I can't ignore the upside here, but at the same time, I understand the risks and the limiting factors. I'm leaning start when Jones hosts the Giants in his next start. Next, we have Luis Castillo in Minnesota. 4 innings, 4 earned, 8 hits, 1 walk, and 1 strikeout. And that 10-strikeout outing from Castillo was really an outlier, huh? Castillo has rarely displayed the pristine command and increased velocity that he requires to be even remotely trustworthy. Even with plenty of strikes and decent pitch separation on Friday, he failed to fan multiple batters. How am I supposed to butter my bread with that? Don't make the mistake of trusting Castillo in September. Next, we have Emerson Hancock in Toronto. 5 innings, 5 earned, 8 hits, no walks, and 1 strikeout. And there must be a butter shortage because Hancock wouldn't intentionally leave us screaming, how am I supposed to butter my bread with that, for the first time all year. He didn't have anything to support his declining heaters, and I can't help but cover my face with my hands and look through my fingers for the remainder of his starts. I've been screaming about the perils of his lack of secondary support and his diminishing fastballs, and it always felt like only a matter of time before it fell apart. I won't say it's over after just 1 start, but I'm going to be cautious in leagues where I can't afford to. Next, we have Cole Drake in San Francisco. 4 innings, 5 earned, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 4 strikeouts. Everyone just wants to be a Swatch these days. I don't blame them. They're pretty dope. Southpaws have such a huge advantage over hitters because they see so many more right-handed pitchers and thus have less experience facing left-handed pitchers, giving Southpaws the advantage. Unfortunately for Drake, to be a Swatch, you have to pair your changeup with above-average command or a reliable heater. Drake hasn't displayed either of those in his young career thus far, so he's not somebody that we're going to trust in fantasy. Next, we have Dean Kramer versus the White Sox. 4 innings, 5 earned, 7 hits, 3 walks, and 3 strikeouts. And when you live and die by the splitter, you end up dying more often than living. Kramer's volatile X-factor offering didn't eclipse 50% strikes. And there you have it, folks. He actually had pretty decent four-seamer and cutter command and a 4-run bamboozling in the first accounted for most of the damage. But it's hard to believe that Kramer is anything different than the pitcher he's been in years past, which is a werewolf, Dean Wolf, we called him, because he doesn't have any changes to his repertoire this year. It's still the same guy relying on four-seamers and cutters with that splitter being the deciding factor. It looked like at the beginning of the year that maybe there was a chance the splitter would be more consistent, but isn't that an oxymoron, a consistent splitter? Next, we have Eury Pérez in our nation's capital. 3 innings, 5 earned, 2 hits, 4 walks, and 5 strikeouts. Man, the third inning was rough for Perez. He opened it by walking the bases loaded. He nearly escaped the jam with back-to-back strikeouts, but then he allowed 2 runs to score on a wild pitch. That also included a catcher throwing error before he walked another batter and then served up a 3-run home run. He closed out the inning, but there was no coming back from that. Sometimes Eury Pérez just doesn't have the command to survive against a major league lineup, and Friday was one of those nights. I'm not going to count out success moving forward. This is a guy with incredible stuff. Second to last, we've got Blade Tidwell versus the Diamondbacks. 5 innings, 6 earned, 7 hits, 1 walk, and 4 strikeouts. I see some promise in Tidwell's arsenal, the sweeper forward approach with decent fastballs and a slew of uninspiring secondaries excels against right-handed batters, but it doesn't get the job done against left-handed batters. I compared him to George Kirby on the First Pitch podcast a few weeks ago, but that's not quite it. I think he's more like the sweeper-loving pitchers on the Astros like Hayden Wesneski or Kaiwei Tang or even former Astro Lance McCullers Jr. Comparisons aside, even throwing 48% of his pitches versus right-handed batters, which is what we saw from Tidwell when he dominated the Astros, he still got crushed because sweepers were ineffective and commanded poorly against those right-hand batters, returning just 8% CSW and 54% CSW. 8% CSW and 54% strike, excuse me. Tidwell is a 2027 upside play in deep leagues. Lastly, we've got Tomoyuki Sugano in Atlanta. 4 innings, 6 earned, 10 hits, 1 walk, and 4 strikeouts. And we want every starter to be dope, especially those pitching in difficult situations. Sugano's doing everything he can to make our dreams come true, but even outside Coors, it doesn't always come together. Sugano's 12 wins, towering over his sub-14% strikeout rate, is so Colorado-coded. Now we can look forward to Saturday, and my game of the day is Sandy Alcantara versus Cade Cavalli. That's going to be a dope matchup. Bring one of those neck fans that you see a lot of people wearing nowadays because these guys will be turning up the heat. But that's going to do it for this episode of the Plus Pitch Podcast. That's every single start from August 28th. Make sure to read the sister article or the accompanying article, the SP Roundup, over on pitcherlist.com, so you can see all of this podcast in writing. Make sure to follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler, where you can find me doing more breakdowns of starting pitchers as well as daily SP streamers. And make sure to head on over to pitcherlist.com and sign up for PL Plus or PL Pro to gain access to the Discord and to all of the incredible features we have on the site. That's going to do it for this episode of the Plus Pitch Podcast. Make sure to tune in tomorrow as we break down every single start from August 29th. We'll talk to you then.